KCSB News presents Inside Isla Vista, a weekly show covering an array of issues important to the Isla Vista community. The mission of the show is to educate, inform, and raise awareness about what's happening in Isla Vista. It does not endorse any political candidates or ballot initiatives. There's a different host each week. Let's meet tonight's host on Inside Isla Vista.
Hi, and it is 5 o'clock on Wednesday, and this is Dick Flax, tonight's host, Professor Dick Flax. Call me Professor Dick Flax. My monthly slot here on the Inside Isla Vista program, always partnering with George Thurlow, the special chancellor's special assistant on Isla Vista matters and alumni official here at UCSB, associate vice chancellor thereof. Welcome, George.
Thank you, Dick.
And another tragedy in Isla Vista might be important for us to highlight and begin with tonight.
Well, Dick, I hate to start with on a down note, but this past weekend we lost one of our alums who fell off a balcony in Isla Vista, and it reminds us that life is pretty precious, and when you're young, you think you live forever, and then something like this happens, and of course in Isla Vista it is not an unusual event. People have been injured and hurt with balcony collapses and people falling off balconies and people falling off the cliff. And while I think we have done a good job working with the county and trying to preserve cliff safety, this was just another reminder that the housing in Isla Vista is something that needs to be constantly looked at. And interestingly enough, tomorrow there's another meeting of the university's housing advisory group, which is a group of landlords, students, faculty, and staff to try and improve the quality of housing in Isla Vista. And one of the major topics is going to be an addendum, which has been proposed by a group of landlords and the university to add to every lease in Isla Vista. It's essentially called the Isla Vista Safety and Security Addendum. And among its many features is one that says people can't be on roofs and no more than X number of persons are allowed on patios and balconies. And of course, this goes back to the tension between how much does government want to regulate behavior and how much responsibility does the university have and do landlords have in terms of safety of tenants?
Well, I'm not clear from what you described about that lease provision. Is that so? Who is responsible if there's an overload? Who enforces that?
So the landlords would enforce it, and essentially it says that, for example, if you're up on the roof and you're caught up there, you're going to be fined by the landlord. What this says is allows the landlords to essentially take action against tenants if they essentially overload balconies and there's parties on balconies and there's an unsafe situation. Now, I should mention that the Associated Students are very concerned about a lot of the language. There's an ongoing discussion between housing and the landlords and Associated Students about exactly how far should we go. But one of the purposes of this is to try and establish a uniform lease across all properties in Isla Vista so that renters know exactly what the rules of the road are, as opposed to having a mishmash of leases.
But I'm sure if I were a renter in IV, I would not want a lease, which I signed, that would hold me responsible for crumbling balconies and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you use the word crumbling, because also in the last couple of weeks, we've had crumbling on Del Playa. A huge swath of Del Playa ended up in the ocean, and it reminds me of John McPhee's writing about California and the fact that the mountains of California are on a relentless march to the ocean. And I want to tell you that Del Playa is on a relentless crumble into the ocean. And it was a little scary
to say the least, I would think.
Yeah, well, the two portions of balconies fell into the ocean. If people had been standing, the county people admitted, if somebody had been standing in that spot on the balcony, they would have gone into the ocean. And the ocean below that particular spot is rocky, and it would have been very dangerous. So what the county is allowing landlords to do is to cut off the backs of their apartments and essentially retreat their apartments back towards the roadway. But I think this is an increasing problem. The most interesting part of this story that I heard was that a property manager told me last week while I was out there on the site that, in fact, this came as a total shock because, in fact, the cliff is retreating in the 6700 block of Del Playa at a rate that everybody understands. This was on the 6500 block, and as I understand it, 8 feet of that cliff have gone into the ocean this year.
And this could be a metaphor for the whole planet, for all we know. But in any event, what it more specifically and particularly brings back history, because nowhere in coastal California would the development that you see on Del Playa be allowed, and it was only allowed through a rather corrupt series of things that happened, a special zoning provisions that relaxed otherwise stricter restrictions on building in an area like those bluffs. And the university was forced to shut up about their worries about this development. So I always say to students when I tell them about the history that looking at this history of Isla Vista is one great argument for why knowledge of history is important, because you get to see unfolding the consequences decades later of these kind of short-circuiting, shortcut, greed-driven, really, maneuvers that people made back in the 60s when Isla Vista was developing. I just thought I'd add that point. So, and the universe, since our focus on our slot has been university relations to IV, so you personally and others in the university are part of this process of building, of creating these leases with these kind of provisions in consultation with these different groups, the AS students, right, and the landlords. So of course, the big thing we've focused on in several of our sessions, and which probably other editions of Inside IV have talked about, is the CSD process. And I think there's some updates that you wanted to bring up about that.
Yeah, so as part of this history that you talked about, is that the evolution here is that self-government is emerging in a stronger way in Isla Vista with this CSD, which is a community services district approved by the voters last year. The law takes effect March 1st, so we are just really close to where this is going to go into action. Interesting political discussion going on is, well, so who is the county going to appoint? Again, to backtrack a little bit, there's 5 elected seats. And the university chancellor and the board of supervisors each has an appointment to that board. So it's a 7-member board. And there's a lot of discussion about now who will the university, who will the chancellor appoint. It's really unknown at this point. But the indications are that there will be an appointment before the CSD holds its first meeting early in March. Also, interesting developments, because the county originally, new county supervisor Joan Hartman, had wanted to sit on that board herself. The county council has ruled that not only she, but any top-ranking county official is barred by statute from sitting on that board. And so the county has opened a process of seeking applications for their seat. It's an interesting development. One of the things that we're working on here at the university is, as you know, the tax part of the community service district. This district was the voters passed by a wide majority to establish the district, but the actual tax to fund the district did not receive the two-thirds vote it needed. It received well over a majority, but didn't. So the district does not have funding other than a $200,000 pledge from the university. One of the things
that's an annual pledge.
Yes, for 7 years, $200,000 on mutually agreed upon projects. So right. One of the projects that I'm working on now is to work with at least one academic department on campus, with private donors, with university officials, to create an internship program that would allow UCSB students to work on the CSD as the sort of the brains and the foot.
To staff it,
yeah. Essentially to staff it. And I think it would be a huge opportunity for students. I think it would be a huge opportunity for the university. And it pays students. It's a way to put money in students' pockets.
And, you know, that model has been on and off a factor in Isla Vista for many decades, the model being UCSB students getting some academic subsidy, you might say, or support for doing work from which they learn an enormous amount and, in fact, in some cases, going on to careers in urban planning and that kind of field on the basis of the experience they got in Isla Vista. So I'm just reinforcing what you said, that this it's a very good role for the university, a great role, because it fulfills its educational and even research functions in this community, this laboratory called Isla Vista.
Well, if it has, and if it's successful, and of course this is an experiment, like all yes. The things we should be doing at the university, this is a social experiment. It may not work, but if it does work, the other, besides the fact that it pays students, besides the fact that it creates momentum for this self-government in Isla Vista, I am hopeful too that it creates a cadre of young people who can stick around and provide the intellectual, historical memory that will keep Isla Vista going. So 2, 3, 4 years from now, these are the future members of the board mm-hmm. of the Community Services District, and maybe one day the future members of the City Council for the city of Isla Vista.
Huh. Okay. You're very forward looking. So the tax itself will be put back on the ballot, right, at some point.
That's a great point. So there's actually discussion going on now. The ballot, the tax is going to go back on the ballot in 2018. And certainly the CSD needs to prove to the voters of Isla Vista that a tax is worth it and would provide services and results that would, and the tax is a utility user's tax. It's a small percentage tax on everybody's utility bills. So one of the important things that a couple of the new board members are working on very diligently right now is to get the board up and running and have results to show the community by the time that tax comes on the ballot. It's interesting, right now there's a little bit of discussion going on about should that be on the June 2018 ballot or should it be on the November 2018 ballot, and people are kind of going back and forth. And I don't know what your feelings are, Dick. I'd love to hear them, but after 3 weeks of this new administration, I just have this funny feeling that in November of 2018, a lot of people are going to come out and vote.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether in this, you know, our they want to make sure that, in fact, Salud Carbajal, our newly elected Congress member from this district, has been just been targeted, it was announced today, as one of the supposedly vulnerable people in Congress that the Republicans want to try to target in 2018. And they have a chance to do that, not just here, but because turnouts have tended to be low in these non-presidential elections because, you know, the younger voters, for example, don't pay as much attention or haven't. So I think, you know, my gut tells me if things continue as they are, the level of civic engagement, to make it sound very nice, a political passion, really, that's emerging in the wider community, and I assume in IV too, will bring people out to vote, yes, in the November election. They might be. I'm not sure whether, you know, I can't say with authority that June is not as good a time as November for this local election.
Well, I know this digresses, but you've written about this and studied it for a long time. Are we on the brink of a new social movement in the United States? And certainly, if we are, it will include Isla Vista, which is for a long time been at the forefront of social movements.
Well, I think we're not only on the brink; we really in one. There is a movement; it even has a name. It's the Resistance, with a capital R, has somehow come to being. It even has an anthem, which is Woody Guthrie's "This Land Is Your Land," has for some reason become. It's an old song, but it's become the song of choice. And I've said this on my own radio show, which is on Thursday, 6 p.m., Culture Protest on KCSB. So if those are little tokens of or indicators of, is there a movement? Yeah, we're beginning to see it. People's meeting all over the place, including in our region, new formations and new gatherings. To plan and develop activity, people turning out en masse. People were saying not long ago, well, everyone's channeling their activism into somewhat futile social media activity. But look, bodies have been out there in large numbers in many different contexts daily now. It does feel like a peak period, or beginning to be a peak period, of that kind of mobilization. So, yeah, both of you and I are probably like to look on the hopeful signs of social change side of things. So that's, I'm supporting.
So how will that, what role, you know, one of the things that I felt is that Isla Vista, the energy in Isla Vista is so focused on the community and, you know, by the bootstraps, bringing up the community, that there hasn't been as much energy for these more national.
Well, I'm not sure what the activists in IV would say in response to what you just said, but they might say this, that in the somewhat longer run, dealing with the Trump phenomenon and the Republican national domination, building up local power, empowering people locally to achieve their more progressive goals and to defend their themselves is an important part of the strategy. And making an empowered Isla Vista that can serve as a model for democratic governance, but also provide certain kinds of space and protection for people, if that's what's on the horizon as needed, you know, that would be an answer to that. And it's how I personally feel. I think continuing to struggle over environmental issues, for example, and immigration issues right here, right on the ground here, is part of the overall national and even global process that we're in with respect to those kinds of matters. And it seems to work. I mean, because you are seeing reversals, or even repeal Obamacare, which everyone thought was the first thing the Republicans are going to do. Now they're talking about 2, 3 year, 4 year or not really repealing. That really seems stymied. I just saw the Homeland Security guy say, oh, well, the wall, the Mexican wall, that'll be several years in the building. Probably never. So this kind of struggle is very much a local as well as a kind of global thing all at once.
What's the role of the media going to be in this? And in particular,
I KCSB. Mean, well,
there we go.
It's a very good lead. What a interesting question to raise right now. Because all the media, including the New York Times, really are looking for grassroots support for them to do the work they need to be doing. And the New York Times just was saying their subscriptions, I think they got 3 million new subscriptions recently.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
The ACLU, not exactly media, has a vast increase in donations. And so here we are in exactly a week. KCSB starts its annual fund drive, that might be a place where people can express themselves, how to fight back in the Trump years, make sure this station is viable. Not only viable, it's not a question simply of survival, it's more because we do get subsidy from Associated Students. It's the quality of what we do that's enhanced by the funding that the community provides during those fund drive, the equipment, making us sound good and having the radio reach that's needed would be an example. Being able to do public affairs and pay the phone bills for long-distance calls and that kind of stuff, maybe subscribing to certain national sources of news would be a use for the fund drive. So that's, I think, what lay behind your question. I was reading your mind there.
Well, thanks. You took those words right out of my mouth. You know, I do think the media is going to be important. As you know, I was at the Independent for many years, and the reporting that's coming from the Independent these days, you know, Nick Welsh's Kelsey Berger. I mean,
they had a great issue two issues back, I think it was, with very detailed information about how you can work with various organizations in the community, and a lot of stories about Trump, the effect of the Trump years on locality.
Excellent work. Yeah. I miss it. I miss it a little bit being there.
Well, but you're here.
Again. Now I'm here, and so I want you to send in your donation. I'm going to make a donation myself. Keep Dick and I on the air for another couple of months, and let's segue into the Isla Vista Parks and Recreation District, which is having a board meeting tomorrow night. And by the way, there's a couple of meetings going on in Isla Vista for those that you are interested in. At noon, the Isla Vista Community Network, which is an amazing group, which is grassroots. Now it's up to about 25 people who meet regularly to discuss all types of issues. Everybody's welcome to come to that. They're meeting at noon in Isla Vista at the clinic conference room. At 5 o'clock, Friends of the Community Center are meeting. They're working on some fundraising, and there's some actual potential for county grants that are going to help get that building, which will be opening this summer, I hope, or by the fall. There's some real great opportunities there for county grants. And then at 6 o'clock, the Isla Vista Park and Recreation District, which is the granddaddy, grandmother of all community organizing, their regular board meeting. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about their bond measure, which we are all behind. We're all supporting, although I'm not allowed to do that between the hours of 8 and 5. As a university employee, but
it's after 5 now.
But since it's after 5, I want to tell you that this will be very, very, very positive for the community. What happened was that some years ago, the district put a bond measure on which charged $28 per bedroom and 7 cents per square foot of non-residential, which was used to buy parkland. That bond has now sunsetted. It's It's no longer being assessed. And what the district wants to do is to essentially keep that assessment going, $28 per bedroom, 7 cents per square foot, non-residential, in order to pay for improvements in the district and programming. And one of the things that I'm working with the board on is recycled water. And so we have been talking with the Goleta Water District, and they have some excellent suggestions for us. And we're looking at the idea of somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000, we could bring recycled water to the parks of Isla Vista. So that's one of the projects that would be funded if that tax passes. By the way, that tax, the ballots go out on April 10th, so that's just a few weeks away. The voting takes place for a couple of weeks. It's a mail ballot. People in Isla Vista should look for it. And there are no opposition at this point. There's no opposition on the ballot measure.
So that's paid by property owners, basically.
That's correct.
Yeah. So that's so the community center, very briefly, as it gets funding, what functions will it have?
You know, I think what's exciting is I don't know.
Okay,
but,
good.
But
it's a secret community center.
Well, it's going to be a community center in which I think everything is possible. And I think, Dick, when you and I go over there a couple of years from now and walk in, we're going to be surprised because there's going to be quinceañeros going on in there. There's going to be yoga classes. There's going to be lectures. There's going to be university speakers. There's going to be dancing.
Okay, so that's great to know because so it's not a central planned activity. It's something that the community will have as a resource for all kinds of public or community activity that we're talking about. I have down here from you talk about success of Jeffrey's Jazz Club. I have no idea what that's about, but that might
Thank
be
you.
A good...
Thank you. So let's that's a segue into a plug.
Yeah.
Jeffrey's Jazz Club is Jeffrey Stewart, the professor of Black Studies at UCSB, who's
Professor of Jazz.
Professor of Jazz. He teaches a jazz class here, and he's taken that class into Isla Vista. And working with Susan Yamashiro in my office and Victor Rios and Kim Yasuda, that we have created a monthly jazz night, jazz club, in the tradition of Borsodi's. And I want to tell you, the last event, which was a couple weeks ago, was the biggest yet. Our next one's on March 3rd. It's at Aladdin's. And the idea here is to take the university into the community, create culture, and create tradition. And so the tradition is Jeffrey's Jazz Club.
Well, what happens? He plays music and talks about it? Or?
No, we have Santa Barbara jazz
musicians
come out.
Fantastic.
Many of them playing at reduced rates. And what's great is they bring their fans into Isla Vista. So the idea is to create a cultural mecca in Isla Vista. And you remember Borsodi's?
I do. Not many people around. So we are at the end of this conversation. I, Professor Dick Flax, not professor of jazz, but of protest music. I'm a professor of protest music. George Thurlow, and glad you were here for this program, Inside Isla Vista. I think there are ways to hear it, not just tonight. And SoundCloud is where you go to hear this program and tell others about. And every week at 5 p.m., someone else will be at this microphone inside Isla Vista. And thanks to Lisa Osborne for being the engineer and producer of it all.
Thank you, Lisa.